I just can't have any social life right now.
Don't worry about it. We're just having coffee. We'll be antisocial.
Hello and welcome to another Damn Fine Espresso. Joining me today is Sam. Hello, Sam.
Hi there, Julie.
Great to have your company. And what we'll be talking about today is not particularly movie related, or it may be movie music related. It's about Sam's travels. Sam, you have wandered the places of the world, clearly. And I've been hearing hints here and there and anecdotes here and there. So I thought I'd ask you to do a podcast with me to tell me all about your trip, because we want to know. So firstly, where did you go?
Well, I had the chance to go to Los Angeles again for a second time. So I must say, even though I've traveled a lot, it's taken me long to come to LA and to finally also encounter some of the movie-related plethora of places and information. So that was my main trip this summer.
Ooh, still movie-related then. Very cool. Did you see any stars?
Yeah, the weirdest incident probably was bumping into Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas?
At the Starbucks, yeah. We were in Culver City, randomly stopping over because there was no other cafe anywhere around. So we went to Starbucks, which I didn't think was so great. But then at one point, my partner points out an elderly gentleman entering the place and he says, "That's Michael Douglas, I think." So I say, no way. Why would you go to a Starbucks in Culver City? So, of course, I go and I investigate. And here's this guy on his laptop or in his tablet working away, talking on the phone to someone. And, of course, because Michael Douglas has this very recognizable voice, I hear immediately it's him. And so, yeah, weird stuff happening. You know, why would he do that? But I guess he's less recognizable these days, a little bit older.
Michael Douglas goes to Starbucks. That's
yeah,
so endearing.
I know. But I had to make sure. So now I know. I guess because of the strike, he doesn't have anything to do but just to sit at Starbucks and work away. So that was, I would say, the funniest encounter.
And you didn't ask him for a photograph because you're a classy person?
Exactly. I thought, you know, especially in LA, if it had been any other place, I think they would expect to be maybe chatted at more frequently. I think LA is the place where even as Michael Douglas, you just want to go have your coffee and do some work and maybe just get away from the office or your apartment or Catherine Zeta-Jones. And that was probably why.
All right. Okay. And what else? So did you see any films particularly, or were you just roaming around there?
We did see a couple of films. Actually, we went to see Barbie in LA, which of course was a very special experience,
yeah,
seeing it with LA people and just see their enjoyment. The kind of the rituals that start to exist when seeing the film, you know, dressing up, reacting to certain scenes. And that was just a couple of weeks after the movie had started and people were already kind of in these community settings where they went to see the movie. And that was really impressive.
Wow, which theater? Do you remember?
We went to a downtown theater very close to the Grammy Museum. The name escapes me now, but it was really downtown LA. And obviously there's lots of LA locations in the film. Santa Monica, I think, or Venice Beach. And then also the area around where the theater was, I think downtown and Culver City, where the headquarter of Mattel is supposed to be in the film. It was all a bit of a mix, they told me. But yeah, of course, people reacted, of course, to the locations as well, which was fun.
And LA generally, I mean, how did you find it? There's, of course, some political issues going on with the strikes, with workers' rights.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see any of that, or did that sort of somehow pass you by?
No, I mean, we drove into the middle of it. We had a studio tour booked at Paramount. And so driving up to the Paramount gates, there were, you know, people in the picket line with the signs doing their circles all day long, apparently.
Oh.
And the Uber driver told us right away that this had been happening for a few weeks now. And of course, it's still going on until,
of course,
you know, these days. So I think it was the Screen Actors Guild that was circling, but I think it mixes in with the Writers Guild as well.
Yeah.
So it was a bit hard to see like who was who, But there was a whole bunch of people, and they were like having, they fed people and they gave them coffee, and then new people would arrive and take over. It's quite interesting to see the dynamics as well. And of course, also to see that inside the studio, nothing is happening. They're just doing maintenance, but all the productions shut down. You know, there's no chance of seeing any studios where stuff is happening at the moment, because everything is affected by the strike, right?
Right. And that's quite a unique moment in time that you visited as well. I mean, it must have been very impressive.
Yeah. And I would say I also felt a lot of solidarity, obviously, with, you know, seeing people, especially, I think, realizing at the same time how much, again, goes into just the studio lot, who the people are that are involved. So just realizing that, of course, these two groups, without these two groups, nothing happens. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have other people, you could probably replace them. But if you have writers and actors striking, nothing moves.
No.
And I think we also saw what was supposed to be produced, you know, new series, obviously Netflix also being a big player in LA, pretty much every big studio that has major productions, either just before release or in post-production. And I think it affects all of them, and that's in a way sad from an egotistical point of view that we don't get that material. But I think it is a unique moment in time, just also to reflect on where Hollywood wants to go, both in terms of what writers get, how many writers are assigned to certain projects, and I think that's one of the main issues. And obviously also AI and how it affects use of images, use of material in the future. So I think that was very interesting to witness that firsthand.
And the tour itself, I mean, what did you see? What does such a tour contain? I mean, I've heard about them and I've seen them in silly comedies where people fall out of cars into water, but I never actually been on one.
Well, we did two very different ones. The one at Paramount is very classy and is great. You basically are part of a 6 to 8 people private tour with someone who's very knowledgeable about movie and movie production. So the person who led us around, you know, on a little golf cart, and you drive around the lot and you stop at certain outdoor sets that they use and reuse and use again. And then they show you the inside of one studio. I was, of course, excited to get to know that Vertigo was filmed there in 57, 58.
Wow.
And you see Alfred Hitchcock's old office, and you see some of the places they can just refurbish for any particular use. So that was really a great tour. And also the introduction they give you with videos, the history. You get to hold an original Oscar and get to take pictures with it. You see the studio gate. Of course, yeah. And it's heavy.
Did you? Did you take a picture with the Oscar?
I did. It was a special effects Oscar. I'd have to look up the film it was from. I can definitely find out again. But I think they replace them every once in a while, but they want to give you an actual Oscar, and it's very heavy. And quite unique, the feeling of that in your hand, you know. And yeah, those were some of the highlights. The only complaint I always have is like, please, if you have a studio tour, also give us a proper studio shop, because I was ready to shop and spend money on memorabilia.
Yeah.
And they really only have a lot on recent films, you know, like Top Gun Maverick, just stuff that I wasn't particularly interested in. But let's say a Vertigo poster, original records, autographs, you know, something on modern classic movies. Mm-hmm. I feel it's really catering to a tourist crowd that isn't very knowledgeable about films. And that's a bit of a shame. But I guess in terms of business, that makes sense for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even just a Vertigo notebook or something, you know.
Yeah, I would have bought so much that originally would have been from the place where it was made. And apparently that's not business anymore. So it's not there. That was a bit of a shame.
Ah, yeah. Okay, so Paramount, right?
Mm.
And Vertigo. And then you are talking about Hitchcock, and you're talking about all these classic movies. Did you get your hands on any music?
I did. Not particularly, not in the studio, and also not at the Universal Studios, which was the other visit that we made, but which is more of this fun park, obviously, the rides, the famous ones. So that, I think, on the Studiant is the other thing that we did. And of course, there are some highlights like the Jaws ride and the Harry Potter world, you know, where you go into the actual...
What's that like?
I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, Harry Potter is amazing. So you have the entire town around Hogwarts, you know, all snow covered, despite the 38 degrees Celsius on that day. And then you have all the shops, the stationery shop, the post office, the restaurants, the cafes. You get to buy special snacks and drinks, obviously lots of souvenirs about the Harry Potter world. There's this back alley from the stories as well. And then you walk up to Hogwarts, and Hogwarts is built, you know, almost to size. And they have all the halls and the offices, the different halls and hallways, the stairs with the different portraits that are partly moving. So this is all built to real size. And then there's this ride that is partly like a scary house ride, you know, haunted house. Mm-hmm. So partly built, and then partly it's like 3D virtual. So you fly through a Quidditch game, for instance, or you fly through the main hall to see all the characters. And there's, of course, sounds and hydraulics. So, you know, some people might get a little sick on that ride, but I managed okay.
Oh, my God.
And so it's quite mind-blowing. I mean, I would say beside the Disney Star Wars rides that we did last year, these were probably the most fun, most authentic such experiences. And they put a lot of, you know, idea, money, and investment into that. It's really quite intricate.
Oh, wow.
So highly recommended.
Highly recommended. Are you a huge Potter head? I don't think I ever asked you that.
I know, and I must say, shame on me, but I pretty much only saw all the films once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
I never really got into like reading all the books. I might have read like one or two of the earlier ones. But of course, I you know, share the enthusiasm of a very generalistic Harry Potter audience member, but I'm not a hardcore fan. I think I never really.
No, right.
I think I was too old when it started coming out.
Right, right. Because it's the youth books of a generation.
Exactly.
In terms of the fandom, and we were just past it when they came out. I think I came as far as Order of the Phoenix book wise, and I think I've seen all the features at least once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're similar.
But I'm not a huge Potterhead either, but that would have been spectacular in any, even if you've never heard Harry
it
Potter,
was.
That would still have been magical.
Yeah, just to see the enthusiasm by people who went there and who are waiting in line and were buying all these things. You could tell that there's it's an intergenerational thing even, you know, the small kids know everything about Harry Potter, the teenagers, the young adults, people my age and older. I think there was just this whole segment of Harry Potter fans. And even though they were made actually at Warner Studios,
yeah,
which is close by, it's Universal that has the ride and has the souvenir. So they have some kind of cooperation going on about Harry Potter in the US, at least. I think London also has a, you know, the station at King's Cross and also has its own proper Harry Potter Museum.
Yeah.
But that's Warner London, so I haven't seen that. I don't know, have you visited any studios in Europe and, you know, any movie production studios?
Never. No.
Hmm.
No. I think it comes from, I mean, I've been to the States, but never to Los Angeles for one. And the only reason I usually went to London was for business, basically.
Right.
So I didn't really go out and go to studios or even, of course, the film museum is something different. I went there. And sadly, I've never been part of a production ever, not even as an extra or something like somebody making coffee. I was into concerts. I did that. I made coffee for those people, but not a film. We don't have a huge film culture in the Netherlands either.
Yeah, not too many big film productions are coming by Switzerland. You know, there was this period in the late 60s, early 70s, of course, including Bond and a couple of other big productions that were filmed in Switzerland. And then I think the only time I came close was applying as an extra to Spielberg's, you know, Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
That was filmed close to here in Interlaken. But apparently I didn't look enough 1930s, 1940s. So one of my friends was cast. And I wasn't.
Oh, that's sad.
No, I was so disappointed. That was my only chance. Now I only see film stars in Los Angeles upon visiting and in other places.
Right. No, and it's interesting. I think a Dutch film, one just off the top of my head, I'm not sure. We got one Oscar for a Dutch film. Antonia's Line, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
Ages ago.
Yeah, I remember the title, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good film too. And we've seen Dutch films for the podcast, right? We've seen Amsterdam and you know, sort of horror films. But I don't think currently there's like a huge movie culture here going on locally. And I live outside the city.
Yeah, right. So you probably, Amsterdam has a lot of filming going on for series and films as well, but we don't often just stumble upon them, right? It's the same in other places. But I feel with LA, what you realize is that it's so part of everyday life, filming. I didn't also quite realize how much is actually filmed in studios all the time, that actually these location shoots take place very rarely.
Right.
And that they have a very versatile area in each studio where they can just quickly come up with New York, just some random European backlot. They can show Paris, they can do Rome. You know, there's like variations of that. And then they, of course, digitally add whatever they need to these days.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very easy to do a production entirely in the studio these days. It's almost as if Hitchcock's dream had come true, that you don't need to go outside of a studio.
Mm-hmm.
You can just do anything in tanks and backlots and constructions.
Yeah, you have much more control as well. And also with the regulatory, I mean, I know that filming in Amsterdam is an absolute nightmare, rules-wise.
Right.
And safety, and it's cramped and small. So I suppose, you know, do Amsterdam in the studio, because otherwise it's going to be a complete nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't even imagine them clearing the canals for a speedboat race nowadays.
How did they manage to do that? Yeah, one wonders these days, right?
We'd have riots. I mean...
Especially for that particular film.
All right. And so, okay, help me again. You did the Paramount one. You did the Harry Potter one. Did you do another one? Another ride?
At Universal, the Simpsons World ride was excellent. And just the general studio tour where you pass famously the Psycho House. So the Bates Motel.
Oh, right. Yes.
Unfortunately, I have no chance to get out of the car. They just drive by it. But of course, that was one of my highlights. And then just very close to that is Hitchcock's office that he had at Universal. So the place where he stayed up until the late 70s before he retired from filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I had read so much about his place, you know, where he had his offices and how his projects came along. First, I saw the Paramount version and then seeing the Universal one as well. That was really impressive, even though it was just like a short drive by.
Mm-hmm.
Including Wisteria Lane from Desperate Housewives and the square from Back to the Future and you know, all kinds of these famous locations as well that they used in so many different contexts. It's quite amazing.
Right. And you couldn't take a selfie in the Bates Motel. That's a pity.
Yeah, I know. I would have loved to walk up, you know, to the Vermeils and just walk up towards it and walk into it, maybe up the stairs and see if they have like a little fake Mrs. Bates coming out with a knife or something.
And then do the entire weird monologue at the very end, which I always keep forgetting what that's there with the, what is it, psychiatrist and the police.
Absolutely, I would have loved that. But yeah, I they still have to do that, you know, a classic movie studio recreation. I think one of my dream projects would be to go to Pinewood in London and then to have the actual Bond sets in real size and just to be able to walk through them. And I feel there's a market for that, but they just haven't put it together yet. But I feel that would be great. Or Rear Window,
yeah.
You know, have the whole set of Rear Window to walk into.
Right.
Be amazing. But unfortunately, stuff like that just doesn't happen, at least at the moment.
No, you'd have to recreate it, wouldn't you? I mean, it would be so interesting as a sort of an amusement park idea, but I suppose that it gives them more control when they put you in a cart, string you in and go like, okay,
exactly.
Fasten your seatbelts. We're just going to go take pictures when you can. It's going to be fast, right? Otherwise, people would dawdle like forever. The Back to the Future Square, I'd be there forever. I swear.
I would. I mean, it would be so fascinating to be in the actual place. And it was nerve-wracking because you wanted to jump out and just go there. The same with the Jaws sets and the shark that they had in the water. You know, there was so much you wanted to like touch and see for a little bit longer.
The model, the little model shark head.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not 100% sure which version it was, whether they rebuilt it for the drive-by, but there is this little setup where they have a pond and houses, and there's like a little diver, and then the shark attacks the diver at first, and you think you're safe, but then suddenly in front of you comes the shark out of the water, of course, you know, and just attacks the car that you're on. It's quite brilliant, but it's so short. I would have loved to have an entire ride just dedicated to Jaws and Back to the Future and E.T., the ride that they used to have, but they don't have it anymore. So it also goes with the time. So now you attract people with Jurassic World and Harry Potter and Super Mario World was just fresh, new, had just opened. So that's not really my movie world anymore. But of course, yeah, it's a generational thing.
Yeah, and I never got out of 1918 anyway. So I think it's all very, very current affairs for me. But all kidding aside, I'd really love to go on one of those. I mean, it sounds on the one hand, it sounds like a little bit kitschy, but on the other hand, I mean, who could resist?
Yeah, there's a certain unashamed enthusiasm about movies altogether in the States, in LA, California. I think that's what I enjoy so much. People are actually very serious about stuff that Europeans sometimes frown at and kind of still think it's lowbrow culture. And I feel in the US and in California in particular, you just have great talks with people about models in Hitchcock film or Max Steiner's manuscripts used for his new biography, or just people walking in that are friends of a certain business. There were a couple of businesses that said, oh yeah, Steve C. Smith, who wrote this amazing biography on Bernard Herrmann and Max Steiner, he's a friend, he comes by. Or Lalo Schifrin, the composer, oh, he's a friend, he used to come by very often. And I'm just like, what? Cool. What are you talking about? These people
that
are not even real.
Cool. Wow, that is unreal.
Yeah, it is.
You also told me that you got some very, very neat film music.
Oh yeah.
We need to know, Sam.
Well, actually it was an interesting experience. In these days you're so used to picking your places on Google, you know, because of the good rating. So I'm always looking out for record places anywhere I go. Mm-hmm. And I piece them together and think, well, that sounds good. So I look on the map, and there were a couple of places that we went to, nothing too special. And then there was this one place that was really poorly rated. It was maybe like a 3.2 out of 5. So, you know, basically saying don't go there at any rate, at any cost. And it was just like around the corner. So I figured, well, let's just go and see. So my partner and I went in there, and there was this grumpy old man sitting at the front. And he said, what do you want? And I just picked up his tone. I said, I want film music. And he said, Henry! And then there's this little old man. I mean, he must have been in his mid-90s, literally. He comes walking from the back, and he says, Henry, show this man to the soundtracks. And so I walk with the old man very slowly, and he takes me to that back part of the shop. And the whole range of records was all soundtracks.
Oh, wow.
You know, I only got from the A to the S in like an hour, maybe. And I really went through things quickly because it was already kind of the end of the day. They were keeping the shop open, I think, even an hour longer than officially stated. And it was the most amazing thing. I mean, rarities all over. And at one point, I came across a John Barry soundtrack that doesn't exist. And I said to Henry, I said, well, Henry, this, how do you have that record? It's Robin and Marianne, that Sean Connery, Audrey Hepburn 1976 movie.
Right. Yeah,
that has
yeah.
beautiful music, which was re-recorded in the late 90s, I think, you know, played by an orchestra. But there was never a release on a record. So I held this record in my hands. And I said, well, what is this? Because this doesn't even exist. I said, well, it's a demonstration record. They never released it. So I'm like, what?
Oh,
and
wow.
I bought it, of course. It was, I mean, it was not overly pricey, but
of course.
It was probably pricey for some. But I started realizing that they actually had stuff from vaults, from studios, maybe even through musicians that was either still sealed. You know, there were like factory sealed records from the 60s. There were other rarities by a composer that is also a friend of the shop, David Raskin, who composed this Shelley Winters and Debbie Reynolds horror flick from the early 70s. Whatever happened to not Aunt Alice? I'll have to look up the title. What's Wrong with Aunt Something, you know, one of those. Mm-hmm. Whatever Happened to Baby Jane? Not rip-offs, but it's a decent one.
Yeah, exactly.
So this was also never released. So just things that were like impossible to find. And I had to go back because we were running out of time. But I said to my partner, I said, John, we need to go back because I want to have more time.
Yes.
And the second time he took me to the back archives.
Of course.
You know, because at one point he said to me, well, do you have a list? And I said, yeah, of course I have a list. I have like a John Barry, whatever I would die for if I had it list. And so he took me to the archives and Henry climbed this ladder. You know, old Henry climbed this ladder and I was kind of afraid for his life because he just leaned it on and just then climbed up to like level 3 or 4 and started picking out whatever I told him. You know, I said, Star Crash, this very rare 70s release that only exists in France and Italy. He had it. But and I know, I mean, I could go on and on, but he just fulfilled, I would say, 3/4 of my John Barry wish list that you'd find in few places, maybe these days on Discogs for a lot of money. And yeah, so you know me, I left the shop with a heavy bag and a full heart and an empty pocket. Yeah.
Of course you did. You're sure you didn't dream this? You're sure this really actually happened? It sounds like a movie. It really does sound like a movie.
It was straight from another movie. So, I mean, I'm definitely willing to go back, ideally next year, but I'm of course afraid that the shop that's been around since 1974, he said it will have their 50th anniversary next year. The record collector for anyone seeking it out, but please don't take my John Barry rarities away that I still need.
Skip the Barry section, people.
Exactly. Skip it. Go for anything else they have. They have an amazing collection. And give them bad ratings so no one goes, so I can go back.
It reminds me of those old bookstores, you know, that you don't even believe exist somehow. Like with people, they're never open. And you know, when you come in, people stare at you funny and go like, excuse me, how can I help you? You know, stuff like that. Like old dusty hardcovers.
Yeah. It's something you couldn't make up and you couldn't imagine at any point, especially not that, like at the tail end of a long day of finding, you know, places and shopping and looking out for things. And I was almost like overwhelmed. I had difficulty focusing, you know, it is. You're in a place where finally you could actually look up tons of things, also from other genres, not just film music. And you're just overwhelmed by the moment and yes. So special to think back to that and obviously put on those records and listen to them.
And it's all vinyl.
It's all vinyl. They only had vinyl. They never changed, the owner said. And of course, these days, there are lots of people dropping by who are buying records suddenly, and they of course, I'm sure business is good at the moment for them.
I hope so.
The rating might hurt a little bit, but I'm sure that some people will just drop in anyway and not know what hits them.
Yeah, I'd say damn the rating.
Exactly.
I mean, I have a record player somewhere.
Oh, okay.
And I have my vinyl stashed away somewhere. I know I do, but I don't even know when I last played a vinyl record.
I would highly recommend you do it. I mean, it's such a trend. I
dig it up.
I started out maybe 15 years ago and then started to pick out, especially film music, but also I inherited kind of like a nice jazz collection. So I got an appreciation early but it was more like a quirky thing. And then suddenly about 10, 15 years ago, the whole record craze started and stuff was re-released and record players are sold, and now it's actually the young, you know, from teenagers onwards that are buying records again and new albums, and they rebuy their old albums. And it's quite astonishing to see what has happened also to prices. What you pay now for new releases, old releases, it's
special editions.
Exactly. So much money is made now. And of course, it surpassed CD sales a couple of years ago already. But I'm pretty sure it will also outdo other music sales in the future, because people, I think there's just a hunger for the physical medium again and just enjoying the album.
Yeah, physical media. Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, when you have it, when you have physical media, especially, this is a tangent, but with old movies also. I mean, Netflix can't decide, okay, this doesn't have enough viewership, we're going to take it off the platform, right? It's yours. You have it. You can watch it whenever, forever. So yeah, I'm big on physical media, especially for things that are outside the mainstream.
Yes, absolutely. And having that and then knowing where it's from, having this, you know, story attached to it, obviously plays into it as well. For me, that's very, very important. And just having that pocket of memory in one album or one movie or one book, I think it seems old fashioned, but I think there's also something very universal about it. Having a collection and having a kind of biographical living, you know, where it's from and you're attached to it, not just because of the content, but also the story behind it.
Yeah, of what it is, right? You're going to have to go back. We're going to have to get very rich and famous, and we're going to have to buy tickets and go back and buy all the vinyl.
Exactly. I'm compiling my list, you know, and getting ready to spend some time with Henry and Co.
Fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. I'm going to, it can't get any better than that story. So I'm going to end it here because it's just supposed to be a short one and we could go on forever.
Or we'll go on next year or whenever any of us, you know, takes a trip and has one of those cinematic experiences. I think there's just so much potential.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your company.
Well, thank you for your interest, Julie.
And thank you to our listeners. We will be back again soon with another Damn Fine Espresso. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.